Pat, I made this point in the morning show. One of the things I really liked last night, and both you and Buck pointed this out, and thankfully, Drew Hutchison also pointed out after the game, and we'll deal with Hutchison and Adam Lind and all that. I thought Donner Navarro had a tremendous game behind the plate for the Jays last night. A couple of those pitches late in the game that Sergio Santos threw, Donner Navarro was money with the glove.
You know what? He is so calm behind the dish and so so calm. He's a calming influence. He's got great hands. He's still. He's not moving around. He gets pitches for the pitchers. And the thing that was really impressive to me last night in that ninth inning, after he gave up the double, Donner went out there to talk to Sergio Santos, almost like, okay, no problem. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to get this guy out. And you can just see the confidence losing from both the pitcher and the catcher, like, hey, no big deal. We're going to make this work. And Sergio was outstanding.
You know, I got to tell you, I had a bunch of us actually had a rather lengthy conversation with Donner. I want to say it was, you know, I was in the middle of spring training. It was after a game. And he must have talked for 20 minutes to half an hour. He's a guy that you can see why pitchers like working with him, because he's plain spoken. He's obviously not afraid to express his opinions. I mean, God, he gave us about six in the span of 20 minutes. He's not afraid to give his opinion. You could see this being exactly the type of guy that could walk a pitcher or talk a pitcher off the ledge.
That's part of the job, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to run the game. Joe Maddon talks about that with his catchers, about intangibles. You have to have those types of intangibles and that relationship pitcher to catcher. And when you have that, that's part of it, calling the game, being a leader. You're sitting behind the home plate and you're looking out and you see the defense and you have a feel for what the pitcher's trying to do and you've gone over your scouting reports. That's what, like, having a good quarterback on a football team is like, a guy who's running the show. It's almost like having another coach out there. And you see that with Donner Navarro. It doesn't take long to sit there and watch a game to see the influence that he's had so far on this team.
Drew Hutchison, 5 1/3 innings, 3 hits, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts. He looked to me like he lost his release point a little bit and then regained it right away. That was exactly the type of stabilizing start the Jays needed, wasn't it, after R.A. Dickey was not very good in the opener?
You know what? This kid impresses me, Drew Hutchison. His stuff, first of all, his mechanics, his presence on the mound. But when you talk to him, he's oozing with confidence. He's saying, I'm going to be on this team. I don't know if you were watching the game and we were talking about that, how he said, you know, I'm going to be your guy this year. This is at the beginning of spring training. I'm going to be your guy. And that there alone tells you so much you need to know about that kid, how confident he is. It's almost like a bulldog out there, like, I'm going to do this. And he fought back from the Tommy John injury, and it's been such a long time. You can just watch him, how positive he is when he goes out on that mound. So happy for him from where he came from with the injury and what he's going to mean to this pitching staff.
Pat, I've got to ask you, Adam Lind is a guy that, he's a guy, he's always a topic of conversation with a lot of people. There are people who would like him. I know Greg Zahn talked about he thought Adam Lind should have been in the lineup DHing on opening day, that he should be a full-time DH. John Gibbons obviously is going to pick his spots. He's going to obviously start Adam against righties, but choose the lefties that he faces. There are, I mean, the numbers people will tell you there's no way in hell they'd like to see Adam Lind up at the plate against a left-hander, that he's basically a platoon guy. Hey, you're a real good hitter. Where do you stand on that? Because I honestly can see both sides of the argument, but I err more towards letting Adam have a few more at-bats against lefties.
It'll be interesting tonight, won't it, when Pat Moore takes the mound, if he's in the lineup or not. Here's my thoughts on that thing. You can see a guy when he's locked in. And right now, Adam is locked in, meaning he's taking good pitches, he's taking good swings, he's seeing the baseball. So it's not going to matter if there's a lefty or righty on the mound right now for me, the way he is approaching the ball at the plate and the way he feels. there are going to be times where he goes into a funk against left-handed pitching, and they can roll the ball up there and he'll make it out. That's just the way the game is. I think that's when you pick and choose when to play a guy or not to play him against the left-hander. But right now he's locked in, so it's not going to matter if the guy's left-handed or right-handed. He got a hit off of a left-hander last night.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter. I would play him. He's a professional hitter. He's a run producer. He's a proven major league hitter who is hot right now. Why would you take him out of the lineup right now?
Pat Tabler joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. No, it's like I said, it's one of those things where I usually have an opinion one way or another, but I can see both sides of the argument. But you know, I'm like you. It's different. If Adam was in his second or third year, maybe I would view it a little differently.
Or if he wasn't swinging the bat
right
very well right now. I mean, you see that happens to everybody. They go through funks where you just go up there and you just don't feel comfortable. You just don't look right, and you say, okay, you know what, let's take him give him a day off here against the left-hander, and let's put Moises Sierra in and let him DH, or you know, we got to get him some at bats. But the way he's swinging now, the way he feels at the plate, you can see it. I think you got to keep his bat in the lineup to help drive in some big runs.
Desmond Jennings' double, I believe that was the double over the head of Colby Rasmus. You described the play perfectly, and the camera guys had a great shot during the game of John Gibbons and Tim Leeper and DeMarlo Hale trying to get Colby Rasmus's attention in center field. I just assume, Pat, that you play a no doubles defense there. Did somebody screw up in that particular play?
We thought that they were trying to get his attention after he hit the double, the second ball that went over mm-hmm. his head. Because yeah, you don't play no doubles there, because that was the tying run at the plate. You want to get a little bit deeper and cut the ball off. And they were trying to get him, and then he eventually moved a little bit deeper. But yeah, I thought when Jennings was at the plate, I thought that was a perfect time to, you know, take three or four steps back just a little bit more, just so there wasn't an extra base hit.
Colby's got to know that, doesn't he?
You would think. He's been in the big leagues a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You would think, and if there's communication going on out on the field, you would think. But you know, teams will play percentages. And it's like the third baseman on the line. You know, well, the tying runs at the plate, you play on the line. Well, the percentages are, you know, a lot of teams don't play him on the line anymore in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning when the tying or go-ahead runs at the plate. So, you know, the Blue Jays might have been playing at normal depth at that one time, but then they certainly did after the second one went over his head. You saw it on TV, like you said. You know, they gave the sign, you know, no doubles, nothing over your head.
Pat Tabler joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Jonathan Diaz went into that game. I kind of felt, I didn't really feel bad for him, but you know as well as I do, Pat, that there were people pining for Munenori Kawasaki. And when Jonathan Diaz was called up, a lot of people were disappointed. And obviously, they're disappointed Jose Reyes got hurt, but I think a lot of people said, well, if Reyes is out, maybe they can bring Kawasaki out. I like the move at the time, bringing Jonathan Diaz up, because I just think he's a superior defender, certainly, to Munenori Kawasaki. And he showed us, he's not going to be a 300 hitter, but he might be able to make contact.
He'll make the at-bats uncomfortable for the pitcher. He'll, mm-hmm. he'll grind him out, as they say in baseball. And first of all, the reason he's here is because he is a superior defender. He can play shortstop a little bit better. We all love Munenori and what he brings to the team and everything like that. And he has good at-bats, but Diaz is a better shortstop, and they need a shortstop right now. They don't really have a true backup shortstop now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they do now, but that they brought Diaz as up. They were going to use Ryan Goins as a shortstop, but I was talking to Gibby yesterday, and he said, I'd much rather see Goins play second base because he's an exceptional second baseman. He can get the job done at shortstop, but he feels like he's an exceptional second baseman defensively. And I asked him, I said, well, why would you weaken yourself at two positions if you move Goins over and then brought in someone else to play second base if Meister played second base. He's more of a utility guy. Mm-hmm. He can play third and short and second at a pinch. But every day, they're better defensively with Ryan at second and now Jonathan Diaz at shortstop. And that's the move. He said, we have to make our defense a little bit better to help our pitchers. We've got a lot of ground ball pitchers on our team.
Yeah, and you know, when this move was made, one of the reasons I liked it is one of the criticisms that I think a lot of people have had in the past of John Gibbons, and certainly it's the hand he's been dealt. It's not something he's doing he did intentionally. But, you know, there was the whole thing last year with moving infielders around. There was the talk about possibly moving Brett Laurie, all that stuff. I like the fact that John Gibbons is saying, look, we've said all, and it's the organization too, we've said all off season, we've said all spring that Ryan Goins is our everyday second baseman. It makes no sense now, because of an injury to the shortstop, that we go to Ryan Goins and say, we're going to play you at short and put somebody else at second. That makes no sense. You need to see Ryan Goins at second base on a day-to-day basis and allow him to develop as a hitter. You want Ryan Goins to be comfortable in the field. Where is he most comfortable? At second base.
That's not fair to a young player to do that either. That happened to me as a young player, getting ping-ponged all around, being told, well, you're going to play third. Now we're going to go over and play second, and now you're going to play first. It's not fair to him. It's really hard to do that, especially for a guy starting his first full year in the major leagues. There's a transition period. It's tough. So I think they're doing the right thing. And Gibby knows. He's been around. He knows the game of baseball and what goes through. It's the right thing. Leave him at second base. You bring up Diaz while Reyes is out, and you go from there. And you're right. We saw that with Brett Laurie last year. It seemed like a panic move. We're going to move him to second base when he came up. He wasn't right. That was really hard for a young player to do that, switch positions like that, and then, oh, by the way, we need you to go out and hit .310. You know, that's hard to do. So I think it's the right move. It was a good baseball decision by the Blue Jays, what they did when Reyes got hurt.